All right. Shabbat Shalom and welcome to UIWU. This is our Sabbath morning study. Thank you very much for joining us. I am excited to be here with you today and looking forward to part two in our series on Torah. So I wanted to say, first of all, thank you for all the positive comments concerning the series. I think the overwhelming response says to me that people are excited about this study, and they're looking forward to a deeper dive into the book of books, into the book that we all love and seek to live our life according to. So I'm really looking forward to today's class. I did want to mention again our United Israel World Union calendars. I mailed those off on Tuesday to everyone on our mailing list. I intended to leave no one off. If you've received one in the past, you should receive one again. I didn't take anyone off the list. No one has upset me or caused me to scratch your name off. So if you don't get one, then it was either lost in the mail, which could happen, or you moved and didn't tell me about it, or maybe something else. I don't know. But if you didn't get one, and give it a couple of days, I am very pleased with my local small country post office for doing such a great job. Remember, this is a small town, and I walked in with several piles, stacks of calendars, more than 300, and I mailed them on Tuesday, and people are already receiving them, so I think that's remarkable. So, if you didn't get one, Dr. Tabor has authorized me to order 150 more. So I did make that order. It's going to be a couple of weeks before those come in. But if you didn't get one and you didn't give me your address, I at least need that. So send me your name, address, and I will get one of those to you when the new supply arrives. So please don't feel left out. And if you were on the mailing list last year and you didn't receive yours yet, give it a couple of days. I mean, like I said, it was late Tuesday afternoon, probably right before closing time. So if you're receiving your calendar, you might get it today. So don't give up. It's in the mail. And if you didn't get one, let me know. This today is the second class of our series, Torah. And I have called today's class Authors, A-U-T-H-O-R-S, Authors. I believe, and I'm not being exaggerative here, I believe that the material that I'm covering in this series is the most important that I've ever taught. I think that, without a doubt, it takes things to a new level, and I'll explain that as I go. But I really believe that this is essential, that it is bedrock, that it is foundational, and I really and truly believe that it will forever change the way we view Scripture in a positive way, not in a negative way. But I believe that the tools that you'll be learning over the course of the next several weeks and the material that I'll be presenting will be very helpful in all sorts of things, not the least of which is how do we in the modern world associate our lives with these ancient texts? Because quite honestly, as you know, Scripture is written over many, many generations by many authors in the land that is on the map behind me. And believe me, I will be using this map at least one time to illustrate a singular point of great importance. But I wanted you to get the feel. I'm coming at you from the biblical world. I'm going to be talking about the text that is, without doubt, arguably the greatest text that have ever been written in the history of man. I can almost guarantee you that even among those of you who are the most insightful biblical students, I can almost guarantee you that over the course of the next several weeks in this study on Torah, you will be shown things that you haven't noticed before. It's not like they're secret. It's not like some hidden mystical secret. but rather you'll be provided with solutions to problems, answers to questions. And again, this isn't because of some mystical tradition or some hidden code within the text of the Bible, but what's going to come forward, what's going to come forth, the information that will be such an impact on us is coming from a careful exegesis of the text of the Hebrew Bible as told by the writers thereof. So I'm not going to have to show, you don't have to learn Hebrew to see this, and you don't have to understand gematria, you don't have to be versed in the great sages of history. The only textbook you will need is the Hebrew Bible. The only textbook you'll need is a Hebrew Bible. I'm not even going to use terms and jargon that's popular in academic circles. I'm not going to be talking to try to sound intellectual at a level that is higher than me and you, but I'm going to be talking from the text, literally from the words, in connection with the words, and on the basis of the words of the scriptures themselves. Now, that phrase, from the words, in connection with the words, and on the basis of the words, some of us in United Israel picked that up from David Horowitz and from his teacher, Moses Gabori. And what it is saying, in a sense, is the answer to the Bible's questions are within the Bible themselves. So that's what we're really going to do. So today, I will begin to share the Bible from the perspective of the authors themselves. Now, what I don't want you to assume is that I haven't been doing that in the past. Someone wrote me this week, and they really called into question my previous teachings, because if now all of a sudden I'm giving you something that you haven't heard of before, the thought expressed in one of the notes that I got, that I received was, well, you've been holding back. Understand that the reason I'm presenting the material now is because I believe that we have a group of students, and I consider myself a student as well, who are ready, who are prepared over many, many years of study together to look at the depths of the text. So we're going to be looking at the text from the text themselves. So imagine yourself inside the text looking around. We're going inside the scripture. For generations, men have imposed the views on the text. So it's an outside-in view. What I want to do is allow the Bible to speak for itself. I'm going to allow the Bible, the authors of the text, to tell us what it is that they want us to know. Now, here is something I would like to add, and I'm going to be careful in the way that I add this because I don't want people to take this the wrong way. I'm going to ask you not to assume that you know where I'm going. A lot of people, when they listen to my class, because I am teaching teachers, have ideas in their mind. They think, oh, I read a book and it said something like this, so let me get ahead of Ross and go ahead and give the verse that he's ultimately going to get to. I'm going to ask you to try, all of you brilliant people, to hold back on that. And I usually don't. I mean, I can't stop you. You can write what you want to write. But I'm going to insist that you insist that I prove my case from the scripture. So allow me to introduce the verses because, now get this, I have prayed about and carefully prepared not only what text to include and the order in which I should reveal them, but I've really put a lot of time into giving the specific order and not only the specific order, but many examples, ample examples and in the arrangement that I want to present them, there will be a reason which will become evident as to why I include certain things and why I exclude certain things. So hopefully that makes sense and it's not too overbearing, because that is not my intent. I want you to chat. I want you to be engaged. I just don't want people to be distracted with a whole bunch of, oh, check this verse out, check that verse out, because it's very important that the order and arrangement is given the way it is. I want to also stress that I'm not simply rehashing an old theory, even though I've learned and benefited from the brilliant teachers that I have been blessed with, not in person, such as Dr. Tabor, obviously, and the Tylers have been influential, and Jodell and the Buntons, and many, many others have influenced me with their studies, not to mention all the books that I've read by brilliant scholars, Richard Elliott Friedman, Baruch Halpern, William Albright. All of these people that I've read have gone into, in some way, shaping my views of the biblical text. But I want you to understand that I'm not going to give a number of footnotes and say, I read this here, I read this there. That will come later, because I believe in properly attributing certain knowledge that I've gained to the proper source. But what I really want to do is get into the text. This material, more than anything that I've covered, requires the attention of everyone. With that, I am pleased that you joined me this morning. Now let us allow the biblical authors themselves to speak for themselves. Today we begin a new course, where credit is given where credit is due, and to whom credit is due. From this point forward, you will no longer be able, because of what you see in today's class, to attribute wrongly the words of someone, whether known or unknown, to a known figure that you have up to this point assumed is the author. The Hebrew Scriptures were written over a long period of time by multiple authors. We all know this. The Bible contains books that are written by singular authors, such as Daniel, or at least attributed to singular authors, such as Daniel, Isaiah, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah. And then there are books that contain the words of multiple authors. An obvious example is the book of Psalms. Now, the book of Psalms is often attributed to the celebrated king David, the son of Jesse. In fact, in literature, you will often find, sometimes in Bibles, the title will say the Psalms of David. Rabbinic literature says that Moses wrote the Torah and David gave to us the Psalms. But a careful reading of the Psalms will show very clearly that the Psalms, consisting of five books, I know that you probably know this, the Psalms are broken into five separate books. You can find this in any good study Bible, companion Bible. And they are written by many authors. The psalmists, plural, include the sons of Korah, Asaph, Etam, Haman, Solomon, even Moses is attributed, or Psalm 90 is even attributed to Moses. And of course, the celebrated King David, the sweet Psalmist. I love that. It's in 2 Samuel 23:1. David, Melech Israel. David is called the sweet psalmist of Israel. Of the 150 Psalms, per the numbering in our Bible, 37 of these can be attributed to David. And what helps us in that is it says, Mizmor le David, a psalm for David, or a psalm of David. And you can go through the Psalms of David. I tell you, I love reading all the Psalms. I love the Psalms. I love to sing the Psalms when I'm up here by myself. I listen a lot to the group, the Sons of Korah. Literally moves me to tears. Quite often, early in the morning, I'll come to this place and I'll walk in and I'll turn the music on and I'll just take in and drink of these beautiful words. And nothing moves me more than the Psalms of David. To think that I'm actually reading the words of David. All the stories from my childhood, all of the imaginations that I have of David, the ruddy boy who's chosen from the sheepfolds to lead God's people, who is forever the standard upon which all the other kings are measured, to read his words, his first person words, the crying of his heart is very, very powerful. David was a man after God's own heart. So sometimes I like to look at the Psalms and specifically the Psalms attributed to David. It doesn't mean that I don't love the other Psalms. It doesn't mean that I don't enjoy and appreciate and benefit from reading the Psalms of Korah. I absolutely do. But there's something about connecting with the most famous people in Scripture and reading their literal words. But there are other works in the Bible that are associated with singular authors. And what I want to begin to show you today, I want to demonstrate to you, I want to let you see with your own eyes, I want to get you into the text, and I want to show you that even books which are attributed to a singular person through tradition or whatever, indicate to us, they say themselves that they are from not only the hand of that person named in the title, but they also indicate the hand of another. I want you to go with me first thing this morning to the book of Daniel, to the book of Daniel. We're going to begin here. And I want to begin to show you some things as we work towards what I want to present to you today in my class on authors. Daniel begins in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And Jehovah gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands. What we have in the opening of the book of Daniel is a historical statement. It puts us in a certain time. It's very clearly indicated as the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. So we know not only where we are on the map, we know the players. We know that we're dealing with Babylon. We know that we're dealing with king of Judah. We get this historical context. Now, I want you to look at verse 6 with me. Now, among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, this particular story begins to tell of the life and times during the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim of certain captives which were taken by Nebuchadnezzar. And among them is a young one by the name of Daniel. Look at verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into grace and compassion with the chief of the eunuchs. Look at verse 11. Then Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs was set over, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Look at verse 21. I'm making a point here. Stick with me. And Daniel continued to the first year of Koresh, the king. Look at chapter 2, verse 13. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his companions to be slain. Notice that all of these references are referring to Daniel. The book is called Daniel. This book begins with a setting, a historical setting that is referencing the times, the life and times of Daniel and his companions. And this style will go on for several chapters. What do I mean by that? We are reading text which are written about Daniel and the events surrounding his life and times. And please understand this, these words are not written by Daniel. This is a third-person account of Daniel's life and times. Daniel did not write what I've covered so far. The third person in the book of Daniel goes exclusively through chapter 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. And then something happens. Now this is where I need your undivided attention. Thus far, as we read through the book of Daniel through the first six chapters, we are reading an account of the life and times of Daniel until we get to a certain point within Daniel. Look with me at chapter 7 and verse 1. Something different begins to happen in the text. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babel, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head as he lay upon his bed. Again, this begins in the third person, but I want you to watch for the subtle shift. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel spoke and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens stirred up the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse from one another. The first was like a lion and had an eagle's wings. And I beheld its wings were plucked off. And it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon 2 feet like a man. And so forth and so on. Now you might say, but in those previous chapters, we had references to the words of Daniel. But you had words of Daniel reported in the third person. There's mention in the earlier chapters about a dream, and they called to Daniel, and he said unto them. Those are reports of Daniel's words in the third person. It is from someone other than Daniel. But understand clearly that now I'm getting into material that was written by the wise one himself. There is a difference in the first six chapters, which I love. I love history. I love these works. I'm not talking or questioning inspiration here. I'm talking today about authorship. I am showing you to identify the hand of the one. Okay? There is a difference when we get into chapter 7. So here we go. I want you to follow with me. Look at chapter 7 of Daniel, verse 15. Now, this is at the white space. As for me, Daniel, first person, my spirit was grieved in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head affrighted me. I came near to one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known to me the meaning of these things. Daniel, first person. These are the words of Daniel. Look at verse 19. Then I wished to know the truth of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, the teeth of which were of iron, its nails of brass, which devoured, broke in pieces, and stamped the residue. These are Daniel's words. You understand me? Look at chapter 8 and verse 1. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me. Who's me? Get it. Even to me, Daniel, after that which appeared to me at the first. And I saw in a vision, and it came to pass when I saw that I was at Shushan, the capital, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in a vision, and I, you see that? Look at chapter 9, verse 1. I'm going to go through several examples. Chapter 9, verse 1, Daniel. In the first year of Dariavesh, the son of Ahasuerus of the seed of Madai, who was made king over the realm of the Chasdeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, considered in the books the number of the years whereof the word of Jehovah came to Jeremiahu the prophet that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolation of Jerusalem. And I set my face. Look at verse 4. And I prayed to Jehovah my God and made confession and said, O Jehovah, the great and dreadful God, keeping covenant and so forth. This is personal. It's first person. It is the words of Daniel himself. Chapter 10, please. Chapter 10, verse 2. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant bread, nor did meat or wine come into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all. Chapter 11, please. 11, verse 1. As for me, in the first year of Dariavesh the Medai, I stood up to confirm and to strengthen him, and now will I tell thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet 3 kings in Paras, and the fourth shall be far richer than all of them, and so forth. Chapter 12, verse 4 and 5. I'm not going to do every single verse, but I want you to really see the distinction that I'm showing you, that there is an indicator. Let the text tell us when Daniel is speaking and when Daniel is not. It's that simple. There's nothing heretical about saying that Daniel did not write chapters 1 through 6, but please hear me. Daniel did not write chapters 1 through 6 of Daniel. But beginning in chapter 7, we are witnessing with our own eyes the very words of Daniel the wise one. Now, I love it all. I will often on Saturday afternoons and Sunday sit down and just read from the prophets. And I love to read Daniel. This week, I got a call from Dr. Tabor. He had discovered something in Daniel that was quite interesting that I hadn't noticed, and I've read it over and over and over. So we're in these texts. I want you in these texts, not an outside looking in person. I want you to be part of the text. And what I'm showing you, you might think, well, I already knew that. Well, stick with me. Let's continue and let's look at a few more examples. Look at Isaiah. Join me in the book of Yeshayahu, in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah contains similarly first-person accounts. These accounts begin in Isaiah chapter 6. Go with me to chapter 6 of Isaiah. Now, I know that some are saying, well, the scribe wrote this. Okay, but what I'm doing now is I'm showing you the distinction between scribe and prophet. There is a difference, and you'll notice it throughout. You'll never be able to unsee it. Okay, in the year, chapter 6, verse 1, Isaiah, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw Adonai sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Seraphim stood above him. Each one had 6 wings. With 2 he covered his face. With 2 he covered his feet. With 2 he did fly. And one cried to the other and said, Holy, holy, holy is Jehovah of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory, and the post of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and so forth. This is Isaiah telling first person of a vision. It's not third person, it's first person. I want you to go to chapter 7, and I'll show you that Isaiah is using the third person at times. Because you might say, well, Sometimes this is just the biblical style. All the biblical writers do this, Ross. It's nothing. It's Daniel wrote all of Daniel. No, he didn't. And you might suggest the same for Isaiah and Jeremiah, and that's simply not the case because both styles are used. Now watch this. Chapter 7 of Isaiah, verse 3. Then Jehovah said to Yeshayahu, Then Jehovah said to Isaiah, go out to meet Ahaz, you and Shaar Yeshuv, your son, at the end of the aqueduct of the upper pool in the highway of the washer's field, and say to him, take heed and be quiet, fear not, neither be faint-hearted on account of the two tails of these smoking firebrands. This is third person. Someone is telling us a story about what Jehovah told to Isaiah. If Isaiah were telling this story, it would say very clearly, as it does in chapter 6, it would say, then Jehovah said unto me. You see the difference? This is going to build. It's going to get more intense. Look at chapter 8 and verse 1 of Isaiah. Isaiah 8:1. Moreover, Jehovah said unto me, take a great roll and write on it with a common kin. Pen, the spoil speeds, the prey hastens, and I took to myself faithful witnesses, namely Uriah the priest, and so forth and so on. You notice how it shifts back to the first person? This is Isaiah. Now, what I do is I go through the text and I indicate with different colors. This is the prophet. This is a narrator. Call him an author, an other author, a scribe, what have you. Again, I'm not talking about inspiration. I'm not casting aspersion on those texts which aren't first person. But let me tell you something. When I have an opportunity to notice that I am reading the words of the prophet himself without doubt, I'm perked. I'm attentive. We know what we know, and we know it not because of some great hidden mystical secret, but because the words, in connection with the words and on the basis of the words themselves, reveal this to us. Very clearly, if Isaiah is speaking, it says, moreover, Jehovah said unto me. Look at verse 5. And Jehovah spoke to me again, saying, since this people refuses the water of Shiloh that goes softly and rejoices in Rezin, the king, the son of Remaliahu. Okay, look at verse 11. For Jehovah spoke thus to me with a strong hand and warned me that I should not walk in the way of this people, saying, see the difference? What I am looking for and want you to see with me is the distinct hands within the text. This is going to become more and more and more important as we begin to teach, because what you will find within the biblical text, those who truly, deeply drink of the words of Scripture, you will find discrepancies. You will find difficulties, you will find problems, and you will be seeking to understand, how do I reconcile these disparate texts? And I tell you what I do. I say, do I have among these a first-person account? And you will be surprised. You will be amazed as we work through some of the difficulties. You know, a lot of times people develop their beliefs, their doctrines, and one group believes one way and one group's another, and one of them uses a text in this portion of the Torah, and one of them uses a text in another portion of the Torah, and people have been fighting about this particular, in this particular way for thousands of years. And quite often, one of the arguments is based on a first-person narrative, and the other is not. This is important. Go with me to Jeremiah, in case you might think that this is only Daniel and Isaiah. Go with me to the book of Jeremiah, please. Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 1. The words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priest who were in Anatot in the land of Benjamin, to whom the word of Jehovah came in the days of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. It came also, you see, I'm giving you the historical setting, historical context, and I'm giving you that, and that goes for the first three verses. The writer here is not Jeremiah. I'll show you the difference. There is a white space after verse 3. Verse 4 says, "Then the word of Jehovah came to me, saying, Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew you. And before you did come out of the womb, I sanctified you. And I ordained you a prophet to the nation. Then I said, Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I'm a child. But Jehovah said unto me, Say not, I am a child." We are getting here, in beginning in chapter 1, verse 4, a first-person account of an event, an episode in the life of Jeremiah himself. In Jeremiah's words, not in the words of another. Now look at verse 11. There's a white space. And then verse 11 says, "Moreover, the word of Jehovah came to me, saying," first person. Now look at verse 13, another white space. "And the word of Jehovah came to me a second time, saying, What do you see? And I said, I see a boiling pot, and its face is from the north. And Jehovah said unto me, Out of the north the evil shall break forth upon all the inhabitants of the land. For lo, I will call all the families of the kingdoms of the north, saith Jehovah." These are Jeremiah's words in the first person. Look at chapter 2, verse 1. "Moreover, the word of Jehovah came to me, saying, Go and cry in the ears of Jerusalem, saying, Thus says Jehovah, I remember in thy favor the devotion of thy youth, thy love as a bride," and so forth. Chapter 3 and verse 6. "Jehovah said also to me in the days of Josiah the king, Have you seen that which faithless Israel has done? She has gone up on every high mountain and under every green tree." Verse 11, one more. "And Jehovah said to me, Faithless Israel has proved herself more treacherous. Within the prophets," I'm talking particularly the words of prophets, "we have mixture." One might be inclined, particularly in the case of Jeremiah, to associate the third person material that exists within the book with Baruch ben Neriah. We know this person from history. Not only does the Bible tell us that Jeremiah had a scribe by the name of Baruch ben Neriah that he used at times. Do we know that he used him all the time? No. And the reason we don't is because when he uses them, the Bible tells us. "And I called to me Baruch ben Neriah and said, Baruch, I need you to write this scroll." But it doesn't say that he wrote everything. These could actually be parts of Jeremiah that are written by Jeremiah himself. Either way, just like in the case of Daniel chapter 7, we get a written vision of Daniel. So what the compiler of this material does, for instance, back on Daniel, the person who wrote in the third person, what they did is they had several visions and writings of Daniel, and they incorporated that into their history book or their book and attributed to Daniel. This is the book of Daniel. It concerns the life and times. And oh, by the way, we even have some of his words incorporated, embedded into the text. It'd be like if I were going to sell the book of Daniel separately, you would say the life and times of the events associated with the Judean by the name of Daniel, plus material written by the prophet himself. You see the point? I want you to recognize the distinction I don't want us to go further than the Bible allows us to go. We're going to make note of certain things, but we're not going to make assumptions. So if you say, well, I believe that all the third person material in Jeremiah is written by Baruch ben Neriah, that's an assumption. We know certain sections are written by Baruch because the Bible tells us that. But other third person narrative, we just simply don't know. So don't assume. By the way, the inclusion of first and third material should be recognized for what it is at the most basic and obvious level. And that is that within the biblical books that we have, and particularly I'm referring to the words of the prophets, we have a record of the words and deeds of that prophet, sometimes according to their own hand, and at times according to the hand of another. In other words, we encounter at times within the biblical text historical and biographical information, and at times we are privy and privileged to autobiographical material. I don't know about you, but when I read Jeremiah's words saying, "And Jehovah, moreover, said unto me," that's powerful. And it's why when I study, I make a note. I say, this is Jeremiah speaking. This is not someone telling me a story about Jeremiah. Look, I love stories that other people tell about Jeremiah. I love the accounts of other people telling me about the life and times of a certain prophet and their words and deeds. I love that. I study it. It's part of my Hebrew scriptures. But when I get to a first-person narrative, I know I'm at the source. The source is that prophet and not another. The other work can be the work of a historian, a narrator's voice, whatever you want to call it, but it's not the source itself. And we look, we know this. We know that this is talked about. I'm going to get into this in another class. But we know that the biblical writers use sources. You know, we know that David, for instance, mentions the book of Jasher, as we say in English, the book of Yasher, the book of the upright. They have copies you can buy on Amazon that are supposedly the lost book. You know, everybody gets so enamored with, oh, it's a lost book. I'm not talking about lost books. We'll talk about the mention because the Bible uses at times sources that are no longer extant, sources that we no longer have. But this, what I'm talking about is within the books that we do have, we have traces of the prophet themselves. Now, you ready to push forward? That was just the introduction. That was just to prepare you for this. If what we saw in Daniel and Isaiah and Jeremiah, and believe me, those are only a few examples. I only selected those because I only needed a little bit of material to prepare you for what is coming. Question to you is, my series is on Torah. Can the same method be applied to Torah that I just demonstrated or illustrated from Daniel, Isaiah, and Jeremiah? And I will say that not only can it be, but it must be. If we're going to allow the authors to speak for themselves. Now listen. There is a view out there, and it is the most popular, prevalent view, and that is this. A person who believes that the Torah of Moses, Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12, the person that believes that those five are the five books of Moses, and that Moses wrote every word within that collection Most people will say that is the orthodox position. Any position other than that is heretical. That is the conservative view that Moses wrote, Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12. And listen to me, people will tell you that that's the only view allowed. If you deviate from that, then you're a heretic. That's the conservative view. A liberal view, they would say, is one which suggests that we have other hands within those five books. Now, I'm going to flip that on you today. I'm going to prove that that is not true, that that is exactly the opposite. Because I'm not the liberal here. I'm the conservative. I'm making the Bible tell me, and I'm not going from the outside in. I'm allowing, and you'll see, hang with me, I'm going to allow the Bible to speak and tell me who wrote it, just like I did in Daniel, Isaiah, and Jeremiah. The word liberal, which is what people might accuse me of, is I'm a liberal, academic, scholarly, whatever, like those are to make me feel bad and hurt my feelings because I'm so sensitive and nervous, you know me. Liberal is rooted in the idea of a word that means free. So the person who is not bound to the text, as I'm putting myself, they're the liberal ones. They've taken liberties with the text that the text doesn't allow. All right. Can we apply the same method to the Torah? I invite you to join me on a quest. It's the most exciting quest that I've ever been on. I'm working on material now. I'm going to give you part of what I'm doing. I'm putting in a book, but I'm going to cover the material with you. I'm going to ask you to join me on a quest to find the hand of Moses within the five books attributed to him. I'm going to ask the question, and we're going to begin to show by looking a careful analysis of the Moses material. Let's call it the Moses material. Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12 is ascribed to the hand of Moses. And I'm going to ask us, and we're going to seek to prove, what did Moses write and what did he not write? And look, you know what's funny? It's easy to see if you allow the Scripture to speak as it says and quit superimposing your liberal ideas upon it. Trust it. It will tell you. We're going to now begin to assess and analyze the Moses material. Now listen, what we're looking for is evidence of historical, biographical, and we're also looking for autobiographical material about Moses and the events associated with his time and his activities. In other words, his words, his deeds, as reported by someone other than Moses in the third person. And we're going to look for, and you will see, what Moses himself wrote. Now look, a lot of people, because they feel so nervous about this, they think, oh, but I have to believe that Moses wrote Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12. You got to stay with me on this. Nowhere does it say that in the text. Now, I know some of you are thinking, oh, but Ross forgot about Deuteronomy 31, but don't post verses yet. I'm not even looking. I know somebody is chomping at the bits to help me out here. You're going with what you've been told, and you've been taking a liberal approach. I'm going to make you all be conservatives in a biblical sense beginning today. Okay? We're looking for evidence of Moses material written by him. by Moses, not by another. We're going to show the distinction between the two. Now, again, we're not talking about inspired. Is this inspired? Is not that? I'm not talking about veracity. I'm only dealing with authorship, just like I'm especially moved when I read, these are the words of Daniel. And as for me, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit. That to me is more moving than, though not any more inspired, if you will, than in the days, the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, there was a boy named Daniel and he was taken into captivity. I want to know the historical, but I really want to get to Daniel saying, please be merciful. And David, look unto me, you know, that I want to know what the prophet said. Same method. And why would you say that we should do this with the Moses material? Why? Because it's the Moses material. You see, this is the reason. It is the single most important investigation we can do. The question would be reversed from me. I would say, why would you not? Why would you not want to know what Moses wrote versus what someone else wrote? The stuff other people wrote is fine. Go with me to Numbers, the book of Numbers. Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, chapter 12. Numbers chapter 12. Numbers chapter 12, verse 3. Now the man Moses was very meek, more so than all the men that were upon the face of the earth. Now the man Moses was very meek, more so than all the men that were upon the face of the earth. Third person. Not something that the meekest man on all the earth would likely write. It would be like me writing a paper and saying, Ross is the best looking Hebrew teacher on the internet. Now, I might believe that. I'm just joking. But you get the point. It would be better if someone else said that than I, because it's more believable. See, the meekest man in all the earth would likely not write that, and it's third person. Now go with me to the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 34, and verse 10. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like Moses, whom Jehovah knew face to face, and all the signs and the wonders which Jehovah sent him to do in the land of Mitzrayim, Egypt, to Pharaoh, and to all his servants, and to all his land, and in all that mighty hand, and in all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel. Now, what a tribute. What a tribute. It brings up several questions, though. Who wrote this? It's in the third person. And it says that there has not arisen a prophet in Israel since, like Moses. Now, the one question is, when was it written? So if this is written sometime in close proximity to the time of Moses, then that doesn't give much to compare him to. You see, in fact, this passage here, not arisen a prophet like, it reminds me of Deuteronomy 18. And I will raise up a prophet like you from among your brothers and so forth, and they'll listen to him. And at the end of Deuteronomy, it says, there's not arisen a prophet like Moses since in Israel. Now, if that's written 20 years after Moses dies, or if it's written if it's written by Moses, it's awkward because it's third person, first of all. It would be more apt if Moses wrote it to say, and God has not arisen a prophet like me, as he said he would a few chapters back, and so forth and so on. But it's third person. So, but if it's written much later, then the comparison widens, see? If it's written 1,000 years later even, It's interesting because then you go, wow, there hadn't been a prophet like Moses since. You get my point. Our answer to this will reflect on Moses' greatness. The closer we get to dating it to the time of Moses, the less great Moses is. Now, while you're in Deuteronomy 34, please look at verse 1. Deuteronomy 34, verse 1. And Moses went up from the plains of Moab to the mountain of Nebo to the top of Pisgah facing Jericho. And Jehovah showed him all the land of Gilead to Dan and Naphtali, the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, and all the land of Judah as far as the utmost sea, and in the Negev and the plain in the valley of Jericho, city of palms as far as Zoar. And Jehovah said to him, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I'll give it to your seed. I've caused you to see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died in the land of Moab, according to the word of Jehovah. And he buried him in the valley in the land of Moab, over against Beit Peor, but no one knows his grave to this day. To this day. Stay with me. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. And the days of weeping and mourning for Moses ended. Now look, here's the deal. At best, this is written after the days of mourning. I'm being very, very graceful and merciful with this opinion. It's at least written after the mourning period. That's the earliest it could be written. But, you know, the reference to this day, as it is this day, seems to imply that this is not written by a contemporary writer at all. Furthermore, it says Moses is dead. Now, there are traditions that Moses wrote this part of the Torah through his tears. But naturally, the best way to read it is that Moses didn't write it. So you go, who wrote it? Well, what about Joshua? A lot of people say Joshua wrote it. Well, let's consider that. Look at the next verse, verse 9. And Yehoshua, Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him, and the children of Israel hearkened to him. Nope, not Joshua. How do I know that? You should know this by now. Third person. If Joshua was the writer, he would have said, and I, being the son of Nun, am full of the spirit of wisdom because Moses laid his hands upon me and the children of Israel listened to me. It's not just a stylistic thing where this is the way the writers write. When the writer wants to convey first person, as in I am representing the actual words of the actual person, first person is used. There's no exception to that. Whenever the third person is used, it indicates that another hand is involved. Okay. We meet with Moses in Exodus chapter 2. And we get biographical information about his birth and his early years. And from this point forward in Torah, Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12, from Exodus chapter 2 forward, the name Moses occurs in 708 verses. 593 in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Some verses contain more than one occurrence of the name. In other words, one verse might mention Moses two times, sometimes three. 640 references in all within the Torah to the name Moses. There's 847, I believe, total in the biblical literature, but 640 references in all. Now, obviously, from Joshua forward, You know, from the time Joshua takes over, after Moses is dead. Remember, Joshua begins, "Moses, my servant, is dead." But from the book of Joshua forward, we know that references mentioning Moses are written by someone else. But I'm going to suggest that the name Moses is one of our clues because it is most often used in the third person to indicate to us that an author other than Moses wrote it. Go with me to Exodus chapter 2. Exodus chapter 2 and verse 11. Exodus chapter 2 and verse 11. Okay. And she called his name Moses, and she said, "Because I drew him out of the water." And it came to pass in those days, when Moses was grown, that he went out to his brothers and looked on their burdens, and he noticed Mitzrayim, an Egyptian, smiting a Hebrew, one of his brothers, and he looked this way and that. And when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Midianite and hid him in the sand. And when he went out, you see this, third person, very clearly, the third person. The question is, who wrote it? There is a school of thought that Moses wrote this. But there's no need to say that because it doesn't say who wrote it. All we get is a third person narration. Now go with me to chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. "Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock far away into the desert and came to the mountain of God, to Horeb. And the angel of Jehovah appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush, and he looked," and so forth and so on. This continues, third-person narration, please hear me, continues without exception through the book of Exodus. Remember, I'm talking authorship and not inspiration, but I am talking authorship. This continues without exception, all third person. Get this, nearly 300 references, no exceptions. Chapter 6, verse 2. Chapter 6, verse 2, please. "And God spoke to Moses and said to him, 'I am Jehovah, and I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob by the name of God Almighty, but by my name Jehovah I was not known to them,'" and so forth and so on. Third person. And it goes on and on. All the way through. You go, well, maybe that's just Exodus. Turn with me to the book of Leviticus, please. Leviticus chapter 1 and verse 1. "And Jehovah called to Moses and spoke to him out of the tent of meeting, saying, 'Speak to the children of Israel and say to them,'" and so forth and so on. Leviticus chapter 1 verse 1 begins in the third person. Go all the way down to our next opportunity to examine the text in this regard. Chapter 4 verse 1. "And Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying," speak to the children of Israel, saying, if it would say, "And the Lord spoke unto me," that would be first person. But it says, "And the Lord spoke unto Moses." Now, you're going to think in just a moment, you're already probably thinking this is just the style in which it's written, that the writer of the Torah, being Moses himself, employed this style, and that will be proven not to be the case. Let's look at a couple more. I don't need to do too much of this, but just look at chapter 5 and verse 14 of Leviticus. Chapter 5 and verse 14. "And Jehovah spoke unto Moses, saying," all right, this continues without exception through the entire book of Leviticus. No exceptions. Third person, 85 references. Listen, no exceptions. Zero. Go to the book of Numbers, because you might believe that perhaps it's only in the book of Exodus and Leviticus. The book of Numbers, chapter 1 and verse 1. "And Jehovah spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting on the first day of the second month in the second year after they would come out of the land of Egypt, saying," And Jehovah spoke unto Moses. Third person. Look at chapter 3 and verse 44. Again, I'm just, look, this could be every page. It's every page. I'm just going to pick up a couple of them. 3 verse 44. And Jehovah spoke unto Moses, saying, third person. This continues without exception, third person narration throughout the entirety of the book of Numbers, without exception, more than 230 references. Please take your time and spend the week looking for exceptions. Listen, though, there are no exceptions. Again, I'm talking authorship, not inspiration. Please go with me to the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 1 and verse 1. Now, some of you are saying, oh, no, relax. These are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel on the other side of the Jordan. Like Exodus, like Leviticus, like Numbers, Deuteronomy begins in the third person. And it contains 35 references in the third person. You hear me? 35 references in the third person. But, ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourself. Everyone take a deep breath. There are exceptions. There are plenty of exceptions in Deuteronomy. A few examples. And by the way, please listen, these are unique to Deuteronomy. This style is not present in Exodus, in Leviticus, or in Numbers. Only in Deuteronomy. Look at verse 9, please. Deuteronomy 1, 9. And I spoke to you at that time, saying, I am not able to bear myself alone. Jehovah your God has multiplied you, and behold, you are this day like the stars of heaven for multitude. Right? Look at verse 12. How can I myself alone bear your care and your burden and your strife? Take wise men and understanding and known among your tribes, and I will make them rulers over you. And you answered me and said, the thing which you have spoken is good for us to do. By the way, Deuteronomy contains this account, and it's in the first person. Do you know that it occurs in another place in the Torah, and the details do not agree? You'll see it soon. But the first person account in Deuteronomy is given right here. Look at verse 16. And I charged your judges at that time, saying, hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother and the stranger that is with him. Look, these are the words of Moses in the first person. Verse 18. And I commanded you at that time all the things which you should do. And when we departed from Horeb, we went through all that great and terrible, so forth. Look down at chapter 2, chapter 2 of Deuteronomy, verse 2. And Jehovah spoke unto me, saying, you have compassed the mountain long enough. Turn northwards. Look at verse 9, chapter 2. And Jehovah said unto me, do not harass Moab, nor contend with them in battle. Chapter 2, verse 17. Jehovah spoke unto me, saying, you are to pass over through Ar, the border of Moab, this day. Chapter 2, verse 31. And Jehovah said unto me, behold, I have begun to give Sihon and his land before thee, begin to possess it. Chapter 3 and verse 23 of the book of Deuteronomy, please. And I besought Jehovah at that time, saying, O Adonai Jehovah. But you have to be careful, people. You have to know to recognize the hand of both, or you'll get confused. Please look at chapter 8 of Deuteronomy, please. Deuteronomy chapter 8. I hope you're having fun. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 1. Let's see. I'm sorry. Look at chapter 5, verse 1. Deuteronomy 5, verse 1. And Moses called all Israel and said to them, "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the judgments." Is that first person or third? It's someone else telling the story about Moses calling all Israel. Moses didn't write that. It's in the third person. Now go to Deuteronomy 8:1, and you'll notice the switch back. All the commands that I command you this day you shall observe to do that you may live. So 5:1 is in the third person. You have to read. As you read along, you're looking. Is this first person or this third? It's standard newspaper stuff here. You want to understand voice. Who is speaking? Now, I know there are traditional answers to these questions, but those are taking liberties with the text. They are so held on to tradition that Moses wrote all of this that they feel they must defend that against the evidence of the text. Look at chapter 10. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 1. One year at a conference, Dr. Tabor presented Deuteronomy 10 as one of the, I think it was the greatest chapter in the Bible. I don't know if that class is still out there. But anyway, chapter 10, verse 1. Listen to this. At that time, Jehovah said unto me, "Hew for yourself 2 tablets of stone like the first, and come up to me into the mountain, and make yourself an ark of wood, and I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets." You realize that Deuteronomy 10 talks about Moses, first person, is telling us about the construction of the ark. James published an article. I want somebody to go find that link and post it so that others can read it again if you haven't. And it's about the other Ark of the Covenant. You realize that in the Torah, outside of Deuteronomy, there's a story about the Ark. And it talks about the people that made it. And it's this beautiful box, and it's got gold covering, and it's got angels on top of it, or cherubim, and keruvim. And this is made by Bezalel and Aholiab. Listen again. At that time, Deuteronomy 10 says, at that time, Jehovah said to me, "Hew for yourself 2 tablets of stone like the first, and come up to me into the mountain, and oh, make yourself an ark of wood." So Moses makes the ark in Deuteronomy. First person. Deuteronomy is unique among the first 5 books. Within Deuteronomy is contained, embedded, as it were, a first-person narrative, it says Moses wrote. Only in Deuteronomy. Now, you have to hear me. This is not to say that all of Deuteronomy was written by Moses. We're talking authorship. Clearly, that is not the case. Rather, within Deuteronomy, we can begin with careful eyes to discern the hand of Moses. We can also discern the hand of another or others. Moses didn't write about his own death and burial. In fact, Joshua didn't write about that either. Let me give you an example. Go with me to Deuteronomy. This one ought to really make this clear if it's not clear yet. Crystal clear. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 1. Please listen. "These are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel on the other side of the Jordan in the wilderness over against Suf, between Paran and Tophel, and Lavan and Hatzerod and Dizahav. It is 11 days' journey from Horeb by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. And it came to pass in the 40th year in the 11th month on the first day of the month that Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that Jehovah had given him in commandment to them after he had slain Sihon the king of the Amori who dwelt in Heshbon and Og, the king of Bashan, who dwelt in Ashtaroth and Edrei beyond the Jordan in the land of Moab, Moses began to declare this Torah, saying. Now we read over that, just like I did, with the assumption and the imposition and stacking onto the text a place that says a doctrine, a tradition that says Moses wrote this. Please look with me to the map and understand this solid proof that Moses did not write what I just read. Please note. Behold my beautiful map. Our beautiful map. It's yours too. Over in this area is the other side of the Jordan. The children of Israel leave Egypt. They go through here. They go to Sinai, not here, Sinai. We'll get into that later. But they go through this region here en route to the Promised Land. They ultimately end up on the east side of the Jordan, and Moses is allowed to look over into the land, but he is not allowed to cross over. Get it? You're not allowed to cross over. Deuteronomy chapter 34 is one place where it says that clearly. So he looks from here and he sees the land. Listen again to this. Deuteronomy 1:1. These are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel on the other side of the Jordan. Look at me. I am on the other side of the Jordan. The writer says, these are the words that Moses spoke on the other side of the Jordan. The writer of this word is on this side of the Jordan. Do you get it? The person writing is on Cisjordan, not Transjordan. He's saying, these words which follow are Moses' words. They were spoken over there. And you go, ah. Now, I'm in the place where the words were spoken. You get it? Geography is telling. Geography is very telling. We have to pay attention. The author will tell you at times who he is not, because he's speaking about the person in the third person. And in this case, he even tells you where he is. Now, when did he write? I say he. I don't know if this author is a man, a woman, or multiple authors who attributed to the third person material. All I'm saying is that it's third person. It's written on the wrong side of the Jordan. Moses did not write this. Again, I'm talking authorship. We don't know who this person is. The question becomes, is all third-person material from the same author? Or can we further discern voices within the text of the third person? And look, the answer is yes. Not in this class. Is everybody okay with this? Do you see the distinction between what Moses wrote and what another person wrote? Not only do we have the illustrations that the text, again, what is the text telling me? Listen, no one, I don't think, I can't say this for sure, few people love the Bible as much as Ross Nichols. Maybe all of you, counting everyone who ever watches this video. Maybe you. But generally, no one loves, but listen, that means I want to be true to the Bible. I'm not going to say that someone wrote something that they didn't write it, unless the Bible tells me so. The Bible tells me so. I sang that when I was 4. Okay. Now, I've got a few other things to go through just to wrap things up to prepare you for next week, because next week might be a little bit deep. So you got to be ready for this. So hear me out on this. I want to prove to you from the text that we have the evidence of a hand in the text throughout the Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12, which is not written from a contemporary hand, meaning the author is writing later about events. Now, this one, go with me to Genesis chapter 12, please. Genesis chapter 12. I'm not really going to deal with Genesis in this portion of the series over the next couple of classes, but I do want to hit a couple of passages which indicate the potential for a very late editing process in certain places. Genesis 12:6, please. And Avram passed through the land to the place of Shechem into the Terebinth of More. Now, first of all, we know whoever wrote this is after the time of Abraham. Nobody disputes that, because most, even fundamentalists, will say, well, yeah, Moses wrote that. He's referring to Abram in the third person. Okay, I get that. Now, but. And the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Canaanite was then in the land. Let me tell you something. Guess when the Canaanites were also in the land? During the days of Moses' life. So understand this. If someone says, well, Moses wrote this, well, why is he saying the Canaanites were in the land? Because the Canaanites were still in the land. And they continued, but this says then in the land, as if it's saying they're no longer in the land. They were in the land, but they're not in the land. Genesis 13:7 says the same point. Maybe not as clear. Now look at Genesis chapter 36. Genesis 36. And here we go. And let's look at verse 31. Genesis 36, 31. These are the kings that reigned in the land of Edom before there reigned any king over the land, over the children of Israel. Now, everybody ought to go, wait a minute, hold on. This is talking about there is a monarchy in Israel, but the writer is saying, hey, what I'm about to tell you, here are the kings that reigned before there was a king in Israel. The implication is at the time of writing that this text is suggesting that it's written at earliest during the monarchy period. It's just an editing note. Now, by the way, just for your information, this list which follows of all the kings of Edom is also given in 1 Chronicles 1:43, word for word, basically. So how did that happen? Okay, another question. But most likely, the time this was written is no earlier than 1000 BCE, which puts us 500 years after the Exodus narratives. Now, some of you might be saying, I don't know about these. Okay, let me bring forth from the same scriptures a very clear indication of a later editor. Go with me to the book of Exodus, chapter 16. Exodus, chapter 16. And verse 35, Exodus 16 and verse 35. And the children of Israel did eat the manna for 40 years. Now, so we know that whoever's writing this is at least writing it at the end of the 40 years. At a minimum, it's got to at least go that far. But wait, there's more. Until they came to an inhabited land, they did eat the manna, and there's more. Until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. Now, go with me to the book of Joshua, and you'll see the earliest this could be written. Joshua chapter 5, Joshua 5, and verse 12. And the manna ceased. On the morrow, when they ate of the corn of the land, neither had the children of Israel manna any more, but they did eat of the produce of the land of Canaan that year. In other words, Exodus 16 tells us that manna was eaten for 40 years. You ever think about that? It's in the context of a story about manna in the third person. And it goes, it includes this narrative information that this would continue for 40 years. But the book of Exodus, and particularly chapter 16, occurs before Sinai even. But it's telling us that they're going to eat this manna until they come to the land. Joshua 5:12 confirms that. So what am I saying? I'm saying that at the earliest, the note in Exodus chapter 16 and verse 32 has to be written at the earliest after they come into the land. So the question becomes, what did Moses write? Go with me to Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31 and verse 9. Deuteronomy 31, verse 9. And Moses wrote this Torah and delivered it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who bore the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah, and to all the elders of Israel. Now, what do you notice, my good, very careful students? Listen again. And Moses wrote this Torah. Moses wrote this Torah. It's third person. Okay? Now look down at verse 24, Deuteronomy 31, verse 24. And it came to pass when Moses made an end of writing the words of this Torah in a scroll until they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites who bore the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah, saying, take this scroll of the book of the Torah and put it mitzad, in the side of the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah your God, that it may be there for a witness against you, and so forth and so on. Take this little book. Here's what Moses says. Levites, take this scroll and put it mitzad ha-Torah. So he tells them, besides the Aron, the Ark of the Covenant. It says that when Moses had finished writing this Torah unto its very end. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in Deuteronomy chapter 31. We still have three chapters left. What do you mean Moses wrote the Torah to the very end? I want to know what's on that scroll. What I just read to you is third person. It says Moses wrote a scroll. I want to know what's in it. It cannot refer to Genesis 1:1 through Deuteronomy 34:12. It just can't. Because we're not even finished. We have three chapters left. So what was on that scroll? What was it called? What was in it? And what was not in it? Join me next Saturday as we search the scriptures, allowing the text to tell us, because we're going to be searching for evidence of the scroll of Moses from the words, in connection with the words, and on the basis of the words. Shabbat Shalom.